There is a name that is so precious, a name so wonderful to me. This name is worthy of all praises, because of him I am made free. That name is Jesus. Oh, how I love him, the one who gave his life for me. Because of love so unconditional, I will have life eternally. This name speaks peace unto my storm clouds. This name speaks calm unto my fears. And when I feel that no one loves me, his loving presence is so near. That name is Jesus. Oh, how I love him, the one who gave his life for me. Because of love so unconditional, I will have life eternally. Earthly dwelling, through time and space my soul will soar, and finally I'll see the face of Jesus and praise his name forevermore. That name is Jesus. Oh, how I love him, the one who gave his life for me. Because of love so unconditional, I will have life eternally. Oh, excellent is that name. Glorious is that name. Wonderful is that name. Oh,
there is no other name worthy of our worship other than Jesus Christ. What a privilege. We're glad that you're here today, and if this is your first time, as I came in, I was actually greeted as a visitor today. And some of you that are like, well, how would the pastor get greeted as the visitor? If you don't know, I don't wear suits anymore. I had to dust the cobwebs and the dust and get the moths off of this thing and pull it out and put it on this morning just to show off some threads for you. No, I did that just because I felt like it, and what a privilege. Normally, if you come on a normal Sunday, I probably wear jeans and something else, like a button-up or whatever, and we just look and say, God's concerned about our heart being right with His, and our heart saying, God, You are the focal point. That's it. That's it. It's all about Jesus. Have you ever had a no-duh moment? You know what I'm talking about? When someone tells you information that you already knew or something that everyone knows, like the Geico commercials where somebody reads this thing and says, oh, wow, with Geico you can save 15%, and the person goes, everyone knows that, right? And the person says, well, did you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, this happens with jokes as well. I don't know if this has happened with you or not. I don't tell jokes that much because I generally repeat, and it's stuff that people already know, and that's the deal with me. And I mess up the punchline as well. But if you hear a joke the second time, isn't it interesting how it's not funny the second time? Like, for example, why did the chicken cross the road? Oh, you knew that one. To get to the other side is no duh. Everybody knows that. Okay, what did the pig say at the beach on a hot summer day? I'm baking. All right, let me try another one for you. Ready? Ready? I'm getting there. Some of you are like, okay, this, you might not know this one. Knock, knock. Canoe. Canoe, help me with my homework. Oh, this is terrible. Okay, we're off to a rough start this morning. You know, church services often have no-duh moments, don't they? Maybe you've come and you're like, okay, we're going to go because it's Easter, and this is what people should do on Easter, and I got this really nice dress or this nice suit or this tie, and I want to come and check this out, and I'm going to hear. And here's the reality. You know what I'm going to talk about this morning, don't you? It's a no-duh moment. It's like, well, no-duh. I've come, look, I'm a regular here. I come every Christmas and every Easter, so therefore, I'm a regular, right? Whether you come every week or just twice a year, you're still regular, and we're good for that. But if you come twice a year, you come at Easter, and you're like, why in the world? He says the same thing, and you come to expect it, and larger people gather on Christmas and Easter, and it's like, it's just going to be the same message. No duh. He's going to talk about what? Wow, that was so tough, wasn't it? Yeah, I am. To top it all off, you know where I'm going with this whole talk as well, don't you? It's not just that he's going to talk about the resurrection. It's not just that he's going to talk about great historical facts. I'm not really going to try to wow you with information that just doesn't really work so well because whatever. But you know the end point. I'm going to conclude with a point that says you need to follow who? Right, so no duh, can we go home yet? No, because I'm not done, right? Here's the main point. If you're taking notes in your bulletin there, you can take notes, and I've made it very simple because you already know. How many of you have already filled this out? Yeah, some of you are like, yeah, I think I got this on you. Okay. So the main point, Jesus is worth following because he is risen or alive. You put in whatever you want, okay? There's the main point. See, this is so easy. Jesus is worth following because he is alive. Why? Because it's Easter. It's Easter. This is the day that celebrates the absolute strangest thing in history. It's the strangest thing that's ever happened. And it calls for us then to follow him. When you go back to the beginning of his life, and right before that, Mary and Joseph, Mary is pregnant with Jesus, and you remember what the angel said, he's going to save people from their sin. He has a purpose. This is what he's going to do, and who understood at that point what that really meant? You know, frankly, when you come into a church service like this, some of you will come in and you'll give it a shot one time, or maybe you come and you come and you're at that no-duh kind of phase of life where it's like, well, no-duh, I've heard this before, or no duh, I've grown up believing this, and I understand this, and it's kind of no duh. And some of you, you kind of tune everything out because you've been hurt by a Christian. You've been hurt in different ways. You've been disappointed with God. You've been frustrated because of the inconsistencies, the hypocrisies, and you're all right there, and you're like, you know what? This Christianity stuff, that is just frustrating to me because I see the hypocrisy. I see the things that don't go the way that they should. I see some things that people have disappointed me. I mean, my ex-wife, my ex-husband, my ex-boss, they were quote-unquote Christian, and do you know the harm that they did to me? I get it. And we could talk about hypocrisy and things like that. And I know. For some of you, it's like, okay, I'm here just because. And some of you come every week just because. And I get that. I think the disciples had those moments too. You see, here's the reality. We're going to jump in today at the point of the last week of Jesus' life. And for the disciples, it was a no-duh kind of a moment leading up to this. It was no-duh, we get that. And if you're going to follow along in the Bible, I'm just going to read a few verses here and there, and you can follow along. In Matthew is where I'm going to spend the bulk of our time, and then I'll end up in Luke. But in Matthew chapter 16, a few weeks ago, we talked about this, and we're going through the story, which is a chronological look at the Bible. And as we are, here's where we are at the resurrection. So a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Jesus' one disciple, Peter. Do you remember with Peter, Jesus asked him a question. He asked all the disciples, and Peter kind of being the spokesperson, the one that talks before everyone else. He says, "Who do people say that I am?" And Peter responded, "Some people say that you're a prophet, or you're Elijah, or you're John the Baptist." And then he turns and says, "Well, who do you say that I am?" Do you remember what they said, or he said? He said, "You are what? The Christ, the Son of the living God." What a huge statement. But for Peter at that time, it was a no-duh statement. He was an insider. He was the one that was around Jesus. He saw the miracles. He saw the different things. He heard, and he kind of understood to the degree that he could understand at that time what he should say. It's kind of like in Sunday school. When the Sunday school teacher asked a question, you would say, "Jesus," because that just seems like the right answer. It's a no duh. It's probably Jesus. And well, 9 times out of 10 it is, so therefore it's okay. And here, Jesus asks them, "Who do you say that I am?" "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Now, that's a huge statement. It really is a huge statement. But for Peter and the disciples, it was kind of a no-duh moment. You go down a little further, and in Matthew chapter 17, a couple events that are going on, and Jesus is talking to them all through their lives, and they're just followers of Jesus. They've kind of thrown all their occupation, their friends, all to the side so that they could simply follow Jesus. In chapter 17, he's talking with them, and this is in verse 22, and it says, "As they were gathering in Galilee, Jesus said to them, 'The Son of Man is about to be delivered into the hands of men.'" Son of Man speaking of himself, they understand this. "I'm about to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and he will be raised on the third day." He is looking forward now and saying, here's what's about to happen. In the future, in the near future, the Son of Man, I'm going to be turned over, and I'm going to be killed, and then I will raise up on the third day. You go down further, and you see what their response was, and it says, "And they were greatly distressed." Listen, if you were following a person, you gave up everything to follow this one individual, and that person said, "Guess what's going to happen? I'm going to be dead soon." Wouldn't that stress you out? Matthew chapter 20, you continue the progression, and it's interesting in Matthew chapter 20 what's going on, because Jesus not only says this once, but he says it several times that's recorded in the Gospels. And so here's another time in the book of Matthew that he says the same thing. So now we're in Matthew chapter 20, verse 17. "And as Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, He took the 12 disciples aside, and on the way, he said to them, it's kind of like, pull over the car. We're going to have a quick conversation here. Not that they had a car, but they pulled over. Okay. So they're having a quick conversation. It says, see, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to whom? The chief priests and scribes. Religious leaders, they're going to take the Son of Man. He'll be delivered over to these. They will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified, and he will be raised on the third day. This is looking forward now. Do you see that? He's looking forward and he's saying, guys, let me be a little bit more precise. Here's who's going to take the Son of Man, the chief priests and the scribes. Here's what's going to happen. He's going to be condemned, and he's going to be, what? Crucified. And guess what? Don't forget about the next part. He's going to be raised the third day. If you're listening into the conversation and your best buddy, your friend, the teacher, the one you've been following after, the master, he's everything. If he just told you, guys, we're just about there. Here's what's going to happen. The chief priests, the scribes, they're going to take me. They're going to condemn me to death. They will flog me. They're going to crucify me. And then I'll be raised the third day. How do you respond? Stress or relaxation? Check it out, because this is a phenomenal response. So it says, then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him with her sons kneeling before him. Now stop. Were they distressed? Doesn't even mention an emotion. In the one previous, it mentions, and I think that Matthew puts it there intentionally for us to glean from. It's like, well, no duh. You've been talking about this Jesus and talking about this Jesus, and you've been telling us, yeah, I'm going to be crucified. Yeah, I'm going to be dead, and I'm going to be raised on the third day. Whatever. It's no duh. All right, already. Can you be done with this? And you get to the next part, and this mom of the sons of Zebedee, two of the disciples, she comes up and says, hey, listen, Jesus, that was a great speech, by the way. Man, I'll tell you what, you had them. That's awesome. Can I just ask you a little favor? And she says, or he says, what do you want? I love this. She says to him, this is verse 21, say that these two sons of mine are to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your kingdom. Isn't this great? Look, Jesus. Thanks, buddy. Man, good job. You had him stunned, riveting. Oh, this is great. Hey, listen. Now that that's over, and the guys are kind of straightened up or whatever, they're just clowning around. But my two sons, you see them, right? They are the straight arrows here. They've got it together. Look, Jesus, do me a favor. I know you got this kingdom thing going on, and you seem like a really cool guy, and I seen you heal people, and that was a really awesome magic trick and all. But can you do me a favor? Look, my two kids, you know them. Can one of them be on your right side and the other on your left? Like, you don't mind this, do you? How would you respond to this? Like the first time he's talking about, I'm going to be crucified and raised again the third day, and they're like distressed. Oh, Peter, did you hear that? John, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Then you get to this point, like, no duh. Next. Hey, can my kids, like, yeah, scholarship? Yeah, all right, good. Do you see that oftentimes that's where we end up? It's these no-duh moments. And it's kind of like, it's like telling your child, have you ever done this? You tell your child, you really need to pay attention to this. Now listen. And you tell them something that, as a parent, you're like so serious. And they look at you, and you think they're kind of glazed over. And then they respond and say, can I have a cookie? And as a parent, you're like, no, I'm going to strangle you. You didn't hear a word I said. And I think that's where Jesus was. I don't think you heard a word that I just said there. You missed it. They tuned out the major statements that Jesus was saying and just moved on. And frankly, stop. Listen. Before we like throw the first stone at them, don't we do the same thing to Jesus? Aren't there moments in our life where we tune Jesus out? Where we tune him out when he says, hey, this part of your life over here, look, it needs to be reshaped. Hey, before you go speak those words, and in your heart and mind, God's working in, and he's convicting you, say, that's not pleasing to me. That's not, nah. You have all kinds of things that are going on, and don't we sometimes tune him out? And maybe this morning you already have. You're like, come on, preacher, hurry it up. We've got Easter eggs and stuff like that going on. Like, we're almost there. But here's the thing that happens. Something strange happens with the disciples. You see, it was just a few days later, probably a couple weeks actually, that the disciples, as we talked about last week, they're up in the upper room. It's the Passover. And they're getting ready for this awesome celebration. And this is a normal thing for them to do. They gather together and they enjoy the Passover together. And Jesus talks kind of weird about, this is my body, this is my blood. And the disciples are like, oh, that's kind of weird. We don't do that vampire thing, but whatever. And you kind of move on. And then they go out and he's talking in John 15 to 17. You can hear a lot of what Jesus is saying. And they walk out and they're going up into the garden. And he says to the guys, listen. Look, this is a really huge night for me. Look, guys, would you pray with me? Yeah, Jesus, we got this. We'll pray with you, no problem. We got it. Hey, listen, I'm going to go over there, Jesus says, and you just stay here, hang out, and you just pray together. Is that all right? We got it. He goes away and comes back a few minutes later, and they're all what? Sleep. Isn't it great? You ever fall asleep prayer meeting, you know? And sometimes a long prayer before a meal, you're starting to nod, you know? And so... He comes back and they're sleeping. He's like, guys, wake up. Come on, listen. This is important. I need you to pray. And he goes away and he prays and he comes back. And what's he find them? Yeah, they're like, no, duh. I know. We got the prayer meeting thing going. Like John started, and you know how John is. He just keeps on going and going, and I just kind of zoned, and his voice is just that voice. It's monotone, and I was gone, you know? And so he comes back and he's like, guys, can you not pray with me for 1 hour? He goes out and he begins to pray, but it goes a little different because as he's praying, he's beginning to feel the stress and the pain, and he's weeping and sweating blood, stress. He knows what's about to happen. And so the guys are sleeping again. And here's what they're woken up with. They're woken up with soldiers that are walking in. And as they're walking in, here comes Judas, their buddy. Like he was probably the top of the disciples. Their buddy comes up to Jesus and he comes and gives them a kiss. And they're like, well, this is kind of weird. The Roman soldiers, they go up and they go to take Jesus. And what's Peter do? Peter's got this covered. He pulls out a sword. He's like, I'll get him. And he goes and cuts off a guy's ear. Great shot, you know? And he's going to take on this whole Roman, it's not going to happen. And so he cuts off an ear. And it's as if no one was paying attention. Here Jesus is like, Peter, put the sword away. We don't fight like this. This is not how my kingdom works. And he stoops down. The guy's like, my ear. And he picks up this ear that's on the ground. This is the coolest thing. And he picks it up and he goes, here, just hold still like this. And puts it on the side of his head and it's just unhealed. And it's like, wow, what just happened there? Nobody pays attention to it. It's just no duh. He does this stuff. Like he probably had Peter set up in the crowd. He's going to do this and threw a fake ear on the ground and like, I don't know what just happened, but okay, that's all right. You know, fine. Then he's taken away. What did the disciples do? They went silent. They had no idea what to do. They ran, they hid, they did whatever, because if Jesus, their master, was taken away, what's next? Who's next? They are. And so what happens with them is they're kind of observing from a distance as Jesus that next morning, and I can imagine they kind of got together, they talked a little bit, and they're confused. The next morning, Jesus is condemned to death. They totally forgot about the no-duh moments. And here, Jesus is then crucified. He's on a cross. Can you imagine as they kind of gather from a distance and they can see? And where's Peter, by the way? Do you remember what Peter did? He had a little servant girl come up and pull on his little, you know, coat and said, hey, aren't you that guy that hung out with Jesus? And what'd he say? No, I don't know that guy. And so somebody else comes and says, wait, I think you knew that guy, right? No, I didn't even know him, and starts cussing up a storm so that he can act like somebody that's not even around Jesus and talks totally different. And the third time, and Jesus looks at him as the third time when the cock crows and the rooster crows and says, see that? I told you. And that's where Peter was. No one wanted to be noticed with Jesus at that time. So Jesus then is crucified. He's there on the cross, and he hangs there for 6 long hours. This week, it was just more noticeable to me for some reason as I was praying through Thursday Friday night specifically, and just thinking Thursday night, what's going on? This is the Passover. This is their Last Supper. And here's the time of prayer. Could I handle praying this long? And if I'm tired and it's been a long day and we did all this work to get this meal, I don't know. And then he's arrested. And then next morning, I got up on Friday morning just thinking, how would I feel if I were the disciples? Have you ever been disappointed with God? God, I'm following you. I go to church every week. I even gave them money last week. I was nice. I forgave. I read the Bible. I even serve at the church. The disciples, they gave way more. They gave up their occupation, their friends. They gave up their time. They gave up everything to follow Jesus. And here now, Jesus is on the cross. 6 hours later, he dies. Where are the disciples? Gone. Gone. Jesus is buried in the tomb. And the next 36 or so hours, they go through this time where they're just totally silent. Sunday morning, though. Sunday morning, something changed. You see, can I summarize why they went silent? You see, Jesus was not about Christianity. Jesus was not setting up a religion. Jesus came to point everyone to Jesus. That's it. He came to point. If you notice, if you read through the Gospels and what the Gospel writers were saying, he kept on saying, follow who? Me. Have faith in me. Believe in me. It was all about Jesus. And so when Jesus died, what did they have? Did they have massive writings? Did they have books? Did they have collections? Did they have these great beliefs and thoughts? No. Matter of fact, if you follow Jesus' way, he says, forgive those that hurt you, that mistreat you. How many of you get in line that want to forgive somebody that mistreats you? Really? You're not going to. I'm not either. And all the teachings that he says, you know, he talks about lust, he talks about money, he talks about all these things, and they're not popular. Matter of fact, they're absolutely weird. Let's be honest. You've been in church too long if you don't think they're weird. So when Jesus died, everything that they had put their faith in had died with it. And so they went silent. Then came Sunday. And I love what happens on Sunday morning. In Luke chapter 24, if you follow along with me, in Luke chapter 24, it's awesome. But on the first day of the week, it says, Luke chapter 24, verse 1, at early dawn, they went to the tomb, taking the spices they had prepared. Now they, when you look at the correlation of what the other gospel writers are saying, it's Mary Magdalene, the other Mary. Mary Magdalene was one that Jesus, back in Luke chapter 7, had cast out the demons out of her and changed her life dramatically. She was one that was an outcast and just totally messed up to someone whose life was absolutely changed. She comes to the tomb first with the other Mary. Why? I don't know. They came with spices and stuff like that. Here's my thought, okay? Like, she's a girl. And who's the one that buried Jesus? It was guys. Now, are guys good at the details of taking care of things and making things smell good and all this other stuff? You notice what she's coming with, right? Spices. Okay? What do guys come with? Have you smelled a guy lately? Maybe you're sitting next to one and you're like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going there. Like, they said they put deodorant on, but I think they did that last week, not today. You know? Here, the guys are the one that buried Jesus. And I think kind of, and it's my sanctified imagination, sense of humor, born. So she's coming out to do the thing that, fixing this thing. But here's the fascinating thing. We can kind of laugh at that, but here's the fascinating thing. To have a woman come and see that the tomb was empty first is something only God would do. If I wanted to authenticate the resurrection of Jesus, I would not use a woman. Not in that day. I'm not being offensive, ladies. Don't throw hymn books at me. Okay. Here's why. Because in that day, do you realize that women could not even testify in court? It was not admissible. So in that day, women were just the lowly of low. They were servants, basically, and couldn't vote, couldn't do anything that was significant. And here, God has a higher view of women than most people do, by the way. And so God says, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to set it up so a woman comes to the tomb first, and she's going to check it out, and she's going to go back to the disciples. And notice what she says, by the way. She simply says, where's the body? You read this in other passages. She's looking for the body. She does not understand the resurrection at that point in time. But she knows the body's gone. She runs back to the disciples and tells the disciples, and here's John and Peter running. And I love how this happens because there's some competition going on. John beats him to the tomb, and Peter's like, yeah, that stinks. And so John beats him there. They get to the tomb. They look in. Why is the stone rolled away? Was it for Jesus to get out or for people to look in? It's people to look in. Isn't that great? Jesus didn't need this stone to be rolled away. He could walk right through it, and as he proved later on. And so here the stone's rolled away. They go looking in, and they're just all mesmerized. Listen, where were they really? Did they get it yet? No, an angel finally said, guys, you're so dumb. Don't you remember back there? Do you remember Jesus said, he's risen. He's not here. He's not dead. Peter, did you just hear that? They go back, and they're kind of celebrating. And then we find on the road there, here Jesus comes and appears to a couple. And here's the point I want to make. So in Luke chapter 24, go down to verse 25. So they don't know who it is yet, but Jesus is talking to them as you read through the whole text. And he says to him, here's Jesus speaking to these disciples because they're telling him all the events, and they're like, hey, did you hear about what's going on? No. How can you not know everything that just happened? And verse 25, Jesus says to them, O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. How would you feel if Jesus said, you foolish one? I love it. You're so dumb. Was it not necessary that Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? In the book of Isaiah, the prophet, speaking of what would happen in Isaiah chapter 53, it is such a graphic and real picture of what would happen through the crucifixion. And at the end of Isaiah 53, verse 10, it says, yet it pleased God to bruise him. It was his pleasure. He had to do this. Why? Because he loves us so much, and that was the only way that he could pay for the sins of the world. It's through the death, burial, and resurrection of his only son, who is absolutely perfect and holy, and it was only through that he would pay for all the sins of all the world. It's awesome. So it pleased God to bruise him. So he begins to explain then to them in verse 27, in beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them and all the scriptures the things concerning himself. I'm sure he went through Isaiah 53. I'm sure he went back to Genesis chapter 3. I'm sure he went to Psalms and other passages that we're just not sure all that he said. And he's talking to them, and finally, they get to the oh, duh moment. I'm sure it hit them at some point. We're like, oh, duh. It's kind of like when you're looking for your glasses, and you're looking all over the place, where's my glasses? And they're on your head. Like, Jen, you got your glasses on your head. And so you got glasses on your head, and you're looking all over, and you ask your spouse or somebody in your house, do you see my glasses? And they see them. I haven't seen them at all. I have no idea. Can you help me find them? Maybe. And it's like, oh, duh. Or your keys, And it's like an oh, duh moment. And here's the disciples as Jesus is explaining, and they have this oh, duh moment. And that's filled then with excitement. You know what I find fascinating? You can read through the rest of the passage, but for sake of time, I won't. Here's what I find fascinating. You ever make a mistake, like a total blunder, like a total oh, duh moment? That's massive, huge. Do you try to cover it up or do you tell everybody? Depends. If you're that type of person that likes this special attention, you tell everybody. You're like, oh, this is so dumb of me, I can't believe it. If you're okay with that and that's your personality, but not everybody's that personality. Here's the interesting thing. The disciples had the oh, duh moment, and for all mankind, for all generations following them, they recorded it in the Bible for all of us to see. Because here's what I find. We often brush up against Jesus, and we hear about him, we read about him, and we kind of sit in this phase of no duh. But oftentimes we come right up against the oh, duh moment, where you actually come across this barrier and you say, oh, he is the Christ. He is the Son of the living God. I don't just say he is risen. I believe in my heart that he is raised from the dead, and it's changing my life, not just for this moment, but forevermore. He's my Savior. It's that oh, duh moment where you're like, ah, oh, that was for me. Changes everything. Changes everything. It changes how you talk. It changes how you think. It changes how you deal with everything in your life, because now you're thinking, look, my thought is, if he could predict his death by the people that was going to kill him, and he could predict that he was going to be raised up 3 days later, I'm going to listen to everything he has to say. And that's what happened to the disciples. The disciples then, they follow this out, and this is that moment, that oh, duh moment, but the follow-up of it is the rest of the New Testament, and we're going to look at that over the next few weeks and see what happened. And next week, we're going to look at actually the church, the formation of the church, and the explosion that happened from this oh, duh moment that just kind of went out from there. But here's what happens. It's about a month or so later. Do you remember Peter? Do you remember where he was? He was afraid for his life. A servant girl was a threat to him. Everyone was a threat to him. I can't admit that I know Jesus. I can't admit this. I was so disappointed with Jesus. And oh, man, there's no way I can't handle this. And now, a month later, Peter goes walking into Jerusalem. He's there with his friends, the other disciples. And as God works in him, he begins to speak about God. And you'll find this in Acts chapter 3. He speaks about Jesus to these people in Jerusalem, the Jewish people. And he says to them, he says, look, guys, listen. You need to listen. God brought Jesus. You killed him. Is it a good position or a bad position? It depends. God brought Jesus to us. You killed him, but God raised him up. Say you're sorry. Repent. Be changed. Put your faith, not in religion, not in money, not in doing better or doing good. Put your faith in Jesus alone. Repent, he says, and be baptized. Be changed. Now, is that a comfortable message to preach to anybody? It's okay to say that to your 4-year-old or your 2-year-old. Not that they killed Jesus, but to say that whole repent part, change. But here he's saying it to a crowd that crucified Jesus literally. Now, God used that in a mighty way. The only person that would do that is someone whose life was absolutely changed, that their faith in life was absolutely changed. It was somebody that would have to believe that Jesus was truly alive. Why would Peter do that if he was afraid for his life back here? What would change? More money? More fame? I think not. You go down further and you see the other disciples and you follow this all the way through to the end of their lives. Do you know that all the disciples but one historically, as it's written about by Josephus and others, historically all of the disciples died a martyr's death. Peter probably the hardest of one, that historically it was noted that he was crucified upside down because he didn't want to be crucified in the same way that Jesus was. He didn't feel that he was worthy of that. John was the only one that was spared the martyrdom, and so what they did was they boiled him, and he survived being boiled in oil, and they exiled him to Patmos, to which he wrote Revelations and others. God had still used him mightily. Why in the world would you go through all kinds of pain if it was just some kind of trick you're trying to play on everybody? Why would you go through all that? I'm talking about historical facts, not fiction. Here's the reality. You only go through that if you know that Jesus is truly alive. It's the only reason. The only reason why you take and you say, I'm going to follow Jesus, the only reason is because he is alive. That's it. So my question, I told you this is where I was going, right? Here's my question, will you follow Jesus? Will you follow Jesus? Now, can I just pause and talk about one disciple for just a second before we close? There's one interesting disciple. He was an agnostic for a moment. You know what an agnostic is? It's someone that says, yeah, I know, but you'd have to prove it to me that Jesus is real. Here's what I found. I found that you come to an oh-duh moment, and sometimes through the hurt and pain and suffering and difficulty and frustration that you go through in life, your marriage isn't working, your finances aren't working, you have this loss that you go through, or this hurt that you're going through, and you simply say, I don't know that God could be real. I don't know that Jesus could be real. I think that Thomas was hurt so badly by Jesus' death. I think he was hurt so badly that he came to the point where the other disciples said, he's alive, he's real, and Thomas said, you know what? Not until I can put my hand into his nail prints. Not till I can touch him. I will be an agnostic until that point. Maybe you're there. Maybe you've been hurt. Maybe you've been disappointed with Jesus. I get that. I get it. By the way, let's think about this truly. If all of the disciples died the death that they died, which one did not go through disappointment? Jesus comes in and talks to Thomas and says, Thomas, go ahead, check it out. My question for those that might be there is, at what point will it be enough proof for you to say, I'll follow you, Jesus? At what point will it take Jesus standing face to face? Because if you have to wait till that point, it's too long. He's giving so much proof, a plethora. So will you follow him? And maybe you've come today for your first time. You're like, I'm going to check this church out and such. And this is totally brand new. I'm going to ask you to follow Jesus. Or maybe you're like, I need more information. I need to understand this a little bit better. Guess what? Here's the cool thing. Jesus gave more information to the disciples too, didn't he? He went through the scriptures with them and took time. Take months, take weeks. Get to know who he is. Follow him. And maybe you come all the time. Can you be renewed in your desire, renewed in your purpose in knowing that you're supposed to be following him because he is alive? Let's pray. Lord, we thank you so much for all that you've done. We thank you for your mercy. We thank you for your grace. We thank you that, God, you gave your life for us, a perfect sacrifice. Lord, guide us that we would follow you every step of the way. It's through Jesus I pray.